Blog Talk Radio.
We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Good evening. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and it's Wednesday night again, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante. We're here every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Happy to be here, courtesy of Missouri Grassroots Coalition, Missouri Grassroots Radio. Busy week. Had a great weekend last weekend. Very busy doing political things, more or less. Had a really fantastic evening on Friday night with Mason Weaver. Mason Weaver was the guest of honor at our local Pachyderms installation banquet here in St. Charles County. And if you have never had an opportunity to listen to Mason Weaver speak, you need to make it your business to get that done, because he's very inspirational, very uplifting, very no-nonsense, which is exactly what we need in the Patriot movement. And all across America, we've let things fall apart because we've become kind of weak and kind of lost our backbone a little bit, and Mason Weaver kind of kicks it into gear, and we just had a fabulous evening with him. Met his family. He's a great man, great family man, and very conservative, good patriot, and just had a wonderful time with him on Friday night. And then on Saturday, I spent Saturday afternoon at this forum on Missouri economic prosperity. And I want to talk a little bit about what we learned there or didn't learn there on Saturday. I'm going to make a few people angry with me, I think, but I kind of do that anyway most of the time. So, you know, I don't know. We're just going to kind of, I think, go through the situation here, because I think some attention needs to be brought on this subject. Anyway, some people worked very, very hard to put together a very nice forum on Saturday to try to bring you some knowledge about the sound money issue. And I know last year there was a bill floating through the legislature on sound money, and they intend to put one through again this year on sound money. And sound money is kind of an issue that's kind of strikes a hot button in the Patriot movement. Folks are pretty serious about it. We all know that it's no secret we have an economic problem in this country. You know, our debt has skyrocketed, spending's out of control. You know, we're printing money left and right, and things are a mess. We're economically a mess. You know, we're almost Greece. It's bad. And there's been a movement across the country, and I think a few states have kind of adopted this philosophy, this sound money philosophy of returning back to using gold and silver as currency. And I think that's what they're trying to do here in Missouri. Here's why I don't like it. First off, I want to say I like the concept. And people that I know and respect on these kinds of issues, pretty much everybody that I know is for it. They're supporting this bill. I think mainly because everybody pretty much recognizes that there needs to be something that has to happen here, because we're falling apart. On that premise, we all agree. You know, there needs to be something going on here. I am just not real pleased, at least at this point, with the way this is being put forth for the folks to buy into. I went to this forum was put together Let's see. I'm not exactly sure who put. I don't remember who the Liberty Project folks put this together. They worked very hard. It's at the Music Conservatory in Baldwin. They packed the place. They did a great job of advertising it, and they worked obviously very hard to get the word out. And people from all over the place were there. It was packed. They had a full lineup of speakers there. They had Tim Jones was the MC, Representative Ann Zare was there, Jim Lemke, John Brunner, Thomas Woods from the Mises Institute, Von Mises Institute, Doug Jaden from the 10th Amendment Center was there, you know, Representative Paul Kirtman was there. There were a lot of people there speaking, and, you know, they had a great lineup of speakers, and it was entertaining. You know, it was good to sit. You know, at no time was I really bored with the speakers, but here's the problem. Okay, I spent almost 4 hours there on Saturday afternoon, and I came out of it with no more knowledge than I had when I walked in the door. Now, I don't consider myself an expert on this subject in any stretch of the form. I have been kind of loosely floating around the perimeter of it. I don't know the fine details of it, and I had expected to go there to get some information, and I absolutely got none, other than the fact that capitalism works, and, you know, some of the reasons and outlines of why capitalism works, you know, all of those things were good messages to have. But, you know, if you're going to promote a bill that you want folks to buy into, I want some details of the bill. Well, the bill hasn't actually been filed yet this year. They had this entire seminar put together, and there was no bill language for anybody to read. Now, Representative Kirtman, I think, filed a bill last year, and I looked it up on my phone, and I think, I'm not exactly sure. I looked up the process of the bill last year, and it had gone through some changes and manipulations, and some ridiculous things had been added onto it, and then I think it died at the end of the session. Not much happened at the end of the session last year, and he did say that he intends to file a very similar bill this year, but nobody knew anything about the bill. There was no bill language in that room for anybody to read, and they spent absolutely no time discussing any part of the bill language. So, you know, I mean, you've got several hundred patriots in a sanctuary in a church in a place you're trying to learn about what this sound money situation is. You're getting the Yankee Doodle speech. There was a lot of Yankee Doodle going on last weekend, folks, about why cap, you know, and Yankee Doodle is fine, you know, but I really kind of felt like I was being led down a path where, you know, no information was forthcoming here. Especially no information on this bill. I just, you know, it just left me a little unsettled. You know, why a big ceremony? Why the big production? And you're not giving us any information. So, what I kind of came to the conclusion in my own mind was that, you know, with all of these questions that are left unanswered, this is pretty much, I think, what's happening here. The folks that are pushing this sound money situation are trying to get you to buy into a referendum. Now, we all remember what referendums are because a couple of years ago, we went through this entire process with Proposition C. We were all sold this big sell job on how Proposition C was going to be the be-all, end-all to getting us through the Obamacare situation. And we went through this, and we all got behind it, and there were rallies, and there were meetings, and there were, you know, going to the Capitol, I don't know how many times throughout the year, and legislators campaigned on it, and everybody thought, you know, okay, Prop C is going to help us all. Well, here we are today in 2013, we've got Obamacare. Prop C did absolutely nothing for us, and except, you know, it got a few legislators elected, you know. So what I'm worried about is that we're being sold another bill of goods here with another referendum bill that's not really going to help us in the end. Now, as far as referendum bills go, if you want to get behind a referendum bill, because something absolutely does need to be done, awareness needs to come out about this issue. People need to be educated about why our financial situation is not working, and we need to understand, you know, how we can fix it or ways we can fix it or what needs to be done. And if you want to support a referendum bill, then support it because you know it's a referendum bill. Don't support a bill because you think that it's going to be the be-all, end-all to all of your problems. This is not really going to fix anything, folks. And so educate yourself on this is what I'm trying to say. Go look up last year's bill language and take a look at how this is going to work. They're proposing that, again, that we use gold and silver currency in Missouri. And that you can, and they want to develop these currency deposit banks, depositories, for you to be able to place your gold and silver in and use it as currency. I think with a debit card is what is pretty much how they've been explaining it. And these depositories are going to be run privately. Well, nobody's talking about who's actually running. There's a lot of unanswered questions. Who's going to run these depositories? Are there going to be any safeguards from the seizure if the government decides, and they've done it in the past, to come and seize your gold? There's no actual safeguards in the bill to keep you safe from the government to come and confiscate your gold. There is, I think, some safeguards in the bill that take the people running the depositories. It protects them, but it does not protect the people. There are a lot of questions to ask about this situation. So, folks, the long and the short of it is on this, and I can be persuaded. We'll have some folks on later on as time goes by, you know, to explain these things and to set me straight if I've gone down the wrong track on this issue. But folks, this is pretty much a referendum bill. Know that it's a referendum bill. Get behind it because it's a referendum bill. You want it. You want to make your voice heard. That's what referendums are for. But it's not, as I see it at this point, going to be a bill that's going to really do anything to move the ball down the road into getting us out of economic despair. I think I've heard the excuse from people saying, well, it's a baby step. You know, we have to take baby steps to get us, you know, it's legislation, it's hard, you know, we have, you know, got to move fast, you know, baby steps. Well, let me just remind you, you know, about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, we had a situation here in Missouri with the China Hub. Everybody remembers the China Hub. And that thing moved like grease lightning. So I don't want to hear anything about baby steps. So if you're going to come and tell me about baby steps, just leave that one at the door. We're not going to talk about baby steps. If you want to introduce legislation to get us out of economic despair, you know, pick it up and run with it. Or if you want to back a referendum because we all want to have our voices heard, fine. Know that it's a referendum that you're backing. But folks, before you jump on the bandwagon with this bill, with this sound money bill, ask the pertinent questions. You know, who's going to keep you safe when the government comes to take your gold? Who's running these depositories? How exactly is this bill going to work? Give me some details on it. How fast can we expect to see some results? Is this bill symbiotic with auditing the Fed? You know, can we use this in any way, or should we maybe even be putting our energy into instead of trying to pass this on the state level? Should we put our energy into pushing the Congress into auditing the Fed, or do we need both? There are a lot of questions to ask, folks. Please, before you go crazy and back this with some kind of expectation that this is going to really help you in the end, please ask the tough questions, because I think, and I'm going to label this for now as another piece of Yankee Doodle legislation until I get some questions answered. And if some people want to come forth with some solid answers, I will give them airtime to do that, and you can set me straight. But right now, you know, after sitting through a four-hour seminar and not really coming out of anything on Saturday, I really want some answers. And you deserve answers, folks. So, you know, I'm not totally throwing the bill in the trash can, but I am labeling it as Yankee Doodle legislation. And we all deserve answers because we're taxpayers and we're citizens of Missouri, and we want our legislators to answer those questions. So come on forth with those answers, and I'll give you airtime for that. Also, last night I was at a meeting, which kind of brings us to the theme of our show tonight. You know, we're all about Agenda 21 here. We've been talking to Ray Cuneo for a week, so I just got off the phone with Ray a couple of minutes ago. You know, Agenda 21, it's been going on for decades, and it's just now becoming a hot-button issue with the folks here in Missouri and patriots across the country. It's the UN's devious plan for one world order, and we are knee deep in it, and it's in every level of our government. And we have with us tonight, we have Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center to talk to us about they have a plan for us to fight. So now there's actually, not only are we trying to educate folks on it, but we're going to educate folks on what they can do to fix it. And that's what we do here on Culture Vigilante. We take things in our hands, our own hands, because nobody's going to take care of it for you. You got to do it yourself, folks. And then we'll also have Dan Sexton from the John Birch Society. They are also a group I know working locally here and I think across the country to also work to battle against Agenda 21. And then later on, we're going to have Gretchen Logue and Ann Gassel from Missouri Education Watchdog. They've been in the Capitol today, and I think they've been knocking on the doors and sitting through God only knows how many committee hearings today. God bless them. I hope that they're not having it. They probably need a drink after being in Jefferson City all day. We'll talk to them and see how they fared. And they're going to talk about a Common Core with us today and some of the things, maybe about how Agenda 21 is addressed in our curriculums and our Common Core in our public education system. And we'll also talk about Dr. Brian Ray is coming to town on January 31st to talk about homeschooling and Common Core and how those kinds of things are affecting the lives of homeschoolers, because you're not free from the oppression and the long arm of the government in your homeschool, folks. The whole government thing is closing in on us at every aspect, and we'll discuss that a little bit as well. So anyway, folks, we have a huge lineup tonight, and so what I think I'll do now is I'll stop talking, we'll take a little break, and we will come back with Tom DeWeese.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible, because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes, walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
I've got a feeling that the tide is turning.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We have a lot of information for you folks. All of the folks that are interested in Agenda 21, we've got just a myriad of information for you folks to get out there and get active and do something about it tonight. And we have one of the nation's leading most authorities on Agenda 21 with us tonight, Mr. Tom DeWeese. Thanks for being with us, Tom.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Lisa. Thank you.
Calling in all the way from Virginia.
I am, yes.
Yep. Okay, so we won't keep you on too long since we know it's later out there, but I'll tell you, okay, so we've been following this for quite a while here on Culture Vigilante. You know, Ray Cuneo is a regular here. He's been very helpful in trying to educate folks on what Agenda 21 is. You're with the American Policy Center. Tell me a little bit about the American Policy Center.
Well, American Policy Center has been around since about 1986. We focus on issues of individual liberty, free enterprise, limited government, and private property ownership. And the issue that we primarily focus on is the private property rights issue. We've worked on issues like national ID and illegal immigration and the education issue and that sort of thing. But lately, over the last couple of years, this Agenda 21 issue has absolutely exploded across the country. We've been involved in it since the beginning for over 20 years when it was first introduced in 1992 at the UN Earth Summit, and trying to sound the alarm to let people know what this is all about. And really, on the last couple of years, people have finally begun to hear our alarms and are acting to it. And I'm thrilled to know that people are finally catching on to it and standing up to it. And I'm amazed by what's going on across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, too, am pretty surprised. I mean, this has been going on for quite some time. It's not a secret, you know, and it's on the UN website. And actually, I posted the PDF to the entire UN Agenda 21 outline on my Facebook page today. It's out there for folks to read.
It's amazing because the proponents of this keep telling everyone that those of us who are opposed to it are conspiracy theorists, and it's a 20-year-old obscure document from the United Nations, and it's just crazy that this has anything to do with local policy or even state or federal policy, and yet we can connect the dots very, very easily. Not only is it the exact same language, we've got documents where they literally say this is the implementation of UN's Agenda 21. 50,000 delegates went to the 1992 Earth Summit. 40,000 just went to the 2012 Rio Plus 20 conference, where they were celebrating the 20 years of Agenda 21 and talking about how do we finish the job. But yet, we're
amazing.
Just crazy.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, this is without trying to sound like, you know, crazy lunatic. I mean, this is the communist. This is the clear and clear intent outline for one world order, a takeover into a communist society.
Well, if you want to really shock yourself, any of your listeners, go on Google and type in sustainability Marxism. You will be surprised at what you find there. The quotes from the people who created Agenda 21 openly admitting that this is Marxism, and that the United States can never be repeated anywhere in the world. We can't have that sort of a society. And for example, Michael Oppenheimer, who's from the Environmental Defense Fund, said the only hope for the world is to make sure there is not another United States. We can't let other countries have the same number of cars, the amount of industrialization we have in the U.S. We have to stop these third world countries right where they are. That's Agenda 21. That's what it's about. There are people involved in this who are corporations and banks and so forth that are taking pledges that they will not help fund development programs in third world countries that allow them to have energy and the kind of luxuries we have in this country. Keep them poor, keep them in the mud huts, keep them around the campfire in the village, and that's sustainable, and that's just plain nuts.
It is. It's shocking. I mean, my jaw's on the floor. I can't. You know, it's right in your face, and they don't care. And it's the antithesis of everything that they accuse of the conservatives of trying to do to the rest of the world. It's nuts.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, to hear them talk about this. I mean, the other thing you can Google is the Equator Principles. The Equator Principles comes right up. What this is sustainable poverty. And it's banks from around the world that have taken a pledge not to fund development programs, infrastructure, shopping malls, energy, cell towers, anything like that in third world countries if they're not done sustainably, which of course means you don't do them at all. And banks like Chase and Bank of America are part of that. And this is, and they give each other plaques for this and congratulations and have big banquets and all that because aren't they wonderful? But what about the hopes and the dreams of the people who live in those third world countries? How are they supposed to get off of poverty if they don't have the means to do that? There are no jobs. There's no infrastructure to help them get the work. There's no luxuries whatsoever. Their intention for them is lifelong breadlines. And what we're seeing happening in the United States as this is being implemented is that the United States' standard of living is going down.
Right.
And eventually we will be a third world country because that is sustainable.
So this is sustainable. The definition of sustainable, they must have changed it somewhere along the line, because that's not what I think of as when I think of sustainable. But another issue, last night I went in my own community. I mean, this is not just a top-down situation coming from the federal government. This is from the bottom up. In my little tiny community here, I went to a meeting, a planning and zoning meeting, more or less, run by what is called here in St. Louis the East-West Gateway Council. And from what I understand, they received more than $6.5 million to try to work with communities to kind of, they wouldn't admit to this, but it sounds like they're trying to dissolve the local governments and merge them so that they can do your economic development planning and mold your communities together.
Yes.
So it's on a very local level all over the United States.
Yeah, regional government, regionalization is a major facet of sustainable development in Agenda 21. In fact, the perpetrators of this say that regional government is the first step towards global governance. And, you know, the way that this has come down from the international level into your backyard, into your community, is this. The proponents of this will jokingly say, there are no blue-helmeted troops at City Hall. The United Nations doesn't have any kind of enforcement power. That's all a joke. That's all a myth, and that's not true. So this has nothing to do with the United Nations. But here's how it happens. Non-governmental organizations, the Nature Conservancy, the Sierra Club, several thousand of these kinds of organizations, private organizations with their own agendas, become sanctioned NGO, non-governmental organizations, in the UN. They actually have to fill out a application, and that says that they will enforce and implement UN policies. Once they get authorized by the UN, then they can participate in these international meetings. They can sit down, write documents, help write them, have their input into them, and they slowly but surely put these documents together. Then they have an international meeting. They have thousands of delegates that arrive, world leaders, bureaucrats from governments all over the world, and then the leaders of the nations come in, and these documents are presented to them, and they sign them. Once that is done, these same NGO groups that wrote it in the first place, I'm talking now Agenda 21 specifically, 1992 when George H.W. Bush signed it, then these same NGO groups came into our federal government. They began to work with the government to create grant programs through the EPA, through HUD, through HEW, through the Commerce Department, all sorts of government agencies. These grant programs had strings attached. The strings are that if you take this money, you have to implement these policies, the policies of Agenda 21, of sustainable development. Then once they put those together, they went into the states, the same NGO groups that wrote it on the federal level, that wrote it on the international level, then went into the state governments, and they got the state governments to pass legislation, for example, that every single county had to do comprehensive development plans. Then the same NGO groups went into the local community and said, oh, the state says you got to put together this comprehensive development plan. Gee, we can help you. And by the way, we know where there's money, too, that can help you.
So where's the money?
That's how it gets there. So we don't need UN blue-helmeted troops at City Hall. We've got the NGOs. Those are the shock troops.
Okay. It's just my head's going to explode. So yeah, okay. So, I mean, and it's obvious, yes. It has permeated every level of government. The state, it's got a stranglehold on the state, and I can tell you just from my personal experience, it's just thick here on the local level. Now, there has been a bill introduced in Missouri, and I think it mirrors an Alabama bill for states to fight back against this. Are you aware of these kinds of legislations floating through the states?
Yeah, sure. And I'm thrilled that that's happening. first of all, for the first time in the last 2 years, for the first time in the 20-year fight we've had against this, we're starting to get calls and inquiries from elected officials at every level. And that's almost a shock as that begins to happen. And I'm thrilled that several states, especially this year, are now putting legislation together that is anti-Agenda 21 legislation. Alabama was the first to do it last year, and the governor signed it. It's law of their state. And that's courageous of them to do that. However, the caution that I have on this, and we're trying to work now with legislators to do some things a little bit differently, and that is you can't just say we're going to outlaw any action on Agenda 21 and we're going to protect private property rights. Two reasons that doesn't work. First of all, the other side never says their programs are Agenda 21. They always say this is just local planning. So mm-hmm. you put a law together that says, well, we're going to outlaw Agenda 21, they're laughing at you. They say, well, you know, this isn't Agenda 21 what we're doing here. The second thing is, if you're going to protect private property rights, you better define what you mean, because today's understanding of what private property rights are very different from what people thought even 40 years ago. You used to say, you know, no trespassing, keep off my land, this is mine, don't step across that line. Today, that's you know, with government invading us in every direction, that's not necessarily understood the same way.
Right. So, yes. Okay, so that's very true. This bill, like the Alabama bill, it's very broad, it's very general. So they need to get more specific.
Yeah.
So are we weaving a spider web here? I mean, is it going to get kind of messy? I mean, Agenda 21's in everything.
It is, and you know, I'm sure there it'll help a little bit. And for one thing, what it does do is it makes people aware of it. It takes every time the issue of Agenda 21 gets into the mainstream like that, and into you know, the state politics or federal politics, whatever. That takes a couple of pieces of tinfoil off my hat. It
mm-hmm.
makes me more legitimate in trying to spread the word on this, and so I'll take it. I'll take it any way I can get it. Back last year during the election, during the primaries, Newt Gingrich's campaign called me to ask me about Agenda 21, because everywhere he went to speak in the primaries, people started shouting at him, what about Agenda 21? And he was giving these lame answers. He didn't know what he was talking about. And people would shout out to him, well, call Tom DeWeese. And so he did. And right after that, he made it an issue. It was in debates. He got on Sean Hannity and talked about it and so forth. And I wasn't a supporter of Newt Gingrich. I have grave doubts about a lot of his of where he stands on things. But every time he took it to the mainstream, that brought it out of the conspiracy level and into the debate, and I'll take it anywhere I can get it.
Absolutely. Okay, so the American Policy Center has been working on some action items, some things that folks can do. I mean, obviously there's a lot of education that needs to take place, and we're working on that. I mean, I know that it is a hot button with the Patriot Movement. We need to cast a wider net and go out into the mainstream, of course, and that's always a big job, but What have you guys got planned at the American Policy Center to help us with that?
We've been working hard to come up with new tools. It's funny because about a year and a half ago, you know, everything we were doing was aimed at listen to us, what this is. So people started to write to me or call me and say, okay, Tom, I get it. Now what do I do about it? And I jokingly said, gee, I don't know. I never got that far before. So we've been working very hard to come up with you know, ways to do that. First and foremost, we've come up with a page of definitions of property rights based on the John Locke formula that John Locke was the one who influenced our founding fathers most, and the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, the ideas in there were based on John Locke's ideas of individual liberty, limited government, free enterprise. And so putting definitions together of property rights to match that then fits right in with the Constitution. So that's one thing we're doing to get that out so people have an idea what they're talking about. The other thing, what's happened up till now, you know, people like me, we go out and we talk about it. we tell our audiences this is Agenda 21, it comes from the United Nations, and we give them all this history. What happened is that people get all excited and they rush in to their city councils or county commissioners and breathlessly tell them, you accuse them of implementing UN international policy. And, of course, the city councilmen are sitting there going, what? They've never heard of it.
Yeah,
they don't know anything about it. And of course, all the NGOs that are standing around there as their advisors are whispering in their ear, the guy's nuts. Don't pay attention to him. And so our people are getting mowed down by the thousands. The other side constantly changes their tactics. They never take their eye off the ball, but they change their tactics when things don't work.
Mm-hmm.
We need to change our tactics. And what we're doing now is really beginning to focus on private property rights. Rather than rushing in and saying Agenda 21, the fact of the matter is sustainable development cannot be implemented without violating private property rights. It's a fact. And so if you can focus on the property rights, then you can make some more progress here. And the way we're doing this, we've created a document. It's called Resolution to Protect Citizens' Property Rights. And this document, all it talks about is transparency, that if planning involves affecting someone's property, that the government will tell them, that they'll have an opportunity to have input into what's happening to their own property, and talks about, if their property is taken from them, that they'll be compensated for it and that sort of thing. And so it's a very straightforward document that isn't radical. It just says, here's what property rights are. You will tell me when you're going to violate them, and you're going to pay me for them if you take it. Simple as that. So it works this way. Instead of rushing into your city council or county commissioners and say, you're implementing Agenda 21, instead, go in, you get that 3 minutes that they give you, and you say, gentlemen, I've just got a question for you. As you're bringing these plans and these planners into our community, what guarantees do I have that you'll protect my private property rights? They will, if they respond to you at all, they'll say, well, of course we will. Of course we will. I mean, I'm a property owner too. I don't want to have that happen. So of course we'll protect it. And you just smile at them and you just say, fine, I'm really happy to hear you say that, but you know what? I'd like to have it in writing. To present this document to them. You have not attacked planning. You have not brought up international policies. You have asked them a simple question that every property owner in that county has on their mind. And if you have other people in the audience who know nothing about Agenda 21, they're now perking up, listening, oh, protect my private property rights. Now, what we understand happens here, I'm sure in 99% of the cases, in fact, we had someone do this as a guinea pig for us to check this out. What happened there was she presented this, and she started to read the document. They stopped her from reading it, and they said, we'll take this under advisement.
Oh,
okay, fine.
Behind closed doors.
Yeah, you haven't lost anything at that point, and we expect that. So the next meeting, be there. She was there, and she said, well, gentlemen, I gave you this document last time. What say you about it? And they looked at each other, and finally one of them said, well, we read the document, and we're certainly in favor of protecting private property rights, but we won't sign this document. Why not? You know, that's the question. There is the outrageous question. Really? Why?
Yep.
They would not tell her why. One guy just said, well, I think there's more of an agenda here than meets the eye.
She you bet.
Really? What?
Yeah. You betcha there's an agenda here.
Yeah.
That's the answer. Absolutely, I have an agenda.
Yeah, but what's happened here is now you've flipped it on them. You are simply asking them without any kind of raucous behavior or accusing them of anything. They have now told you they will not sign a document that says they'll protect your private property rights. Now, this is something you cannot do alone because that'll be the end of it. If you do that, what you need at that point are 5 or 10 people to stand up in that meeting and say, why? I endorse that document. Why won't you sign it? And every single meeting, you need to come in and do it again and do it again and do it again. You need to make them the issue now. Why won't our county commissioners sign a document to protect our private property rights? People who know nothing about all this, aren't Tea Party people, aren't, you know, activists in this, sitting there going, they won't sign a document to defend my private property rights? So what you're doing is laying the groundwork to begin a campaign to run them out of office, to run candidates against them. This is what it's about. This isn't a legal document. It isn't a,
it's a pledge.
You know, contracting like that. It is simply a tool to begin to lay the groundwork to really put down what they're really about. And I, as I was telling a group in Richmond about the situation we had in Southern Virginia, where they said, well, there's a bigger debate, there's a bigger agenda afoot here, and I'm not going to debate it with you. Every time she asked them why, they said, well, I'm not going to debate it with you. They said, I don't want to debate. I just want to know why you won't do it. Literally, and he says there's a bigger agenda afoot here. Literally, what those people in that county can do for, in the next election is say, this guy has some kind of wacky conspiracy theory about protecting private property rights. At that point, you have completely flipped the issue on them, and you're taking the high ground, and they are sitting there trying to defend themselves, and that's what it's all about. It's a tactic. It's a tool.
Yep. We're familiar with pledges here. Homeschooling United has a wonderful homeschooling pledge, and you're right. They, you know, elected people do not like to sign pledges. They don't like to put their name on the dotted line, and they squirm. And when you're just asking them to do something as simple as protecting your freedom, whether it's with Agenda 21 or education or whatever, they just don't like it. And asking them to be accountable as to why they won't sign it is the absolute answer. It's what our nation was built on.
We're doing is we're calling them out and we're making them talk about it. And that's what it's about.
Yeah. And writing letters to your local editor about, you know, XYZ councilman will not sign this pledge. XYZ councilman will not, you know, support private property.
Yeah, well, that's the rest of it that you need to do. That's why you can't do this alone. You need to show up at one point with a group of people outside with signs that have the pictures, the names of those county commissioners saying, why won't they sign a document to protect our private property rights? Write the letters to the editor, put out news releases, you know, signs in windows and stores, whatever you have to do to get that message out that there's a real problem here because our elected officials don't have our best interest in hand. Make them the issue. And, you know, the other thing is that all these NGOs that are standing there behind them, they are there in your community. They are the ones behind the scenes that are putting these pieces of legislation in place. They're writing them. They're directing them through there. They're on their arm every single minute. And we need to call them out. We need to show who they are and put a big spotlight on them. They're a bunch of cockroaches that want to hide under a rock with no light, and you need to knock the rock away and shine a bright light on them. And it's amazing what they'll do. They aren't used to it, and we're having this happen in the county I live in right now, and it's almost humorous to watch them because they're not used to it and don't really know how to handle it. But you know, with good solid activists that take their time and know what they're doing, do their research, this can be a very, very effective tool.
Okay, so American Policy Center has got, it sounds like, a great toolbox put together on how to become an activist for Agenda 21. How do we get a hold of this information, Tom?
We have a couple of things. One of the things we did, we put the granddaddy of them all together. We put a Stop Agenda 21 action kit together several months ago, and it has everything in it. It's got three manuals in it. All the background information. It's got a workbook in it that has actual documents, flyers that you can make copies of. You don't even have to make up your own. You can just make copies and pass them out in very quick, short ways to describe what the Agenda 21 is. There's a workbook in there about how to bust up these consensus meetings, that how they put all these things in place. And we're just getting ready to, all the stuff I just talked about, we're getting ready to add that as a new manual into it on how to fight back. We also have a new booklet that we just came out with and announced it yesterday, in fact, Agenda 21 and How to Stop It. And both of these things are on our website at AmericanPolicy.org. You can right on the front. You can go in there and order them from there.
Okay, and all of these things are costly too. I'm sure you're trying to cover your costs on these things with minimal fees for them. But if people want to make a donation to American Policy, how can we take care of that?
They can do that too on the website. There's a place there to go in and donate. The tools I just talked about do have a cost. We sell those. We've got a lot of DVDs and also stuff like that for sale too. We got all kinds of items, how to educate people on it. But you can make a donation at AmericanPolicy.org. There's a spot there. Just click on it. And if you want me to come and speak and talk about all this, that's on there too. You can sign up for that on there too.
Excellent. Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center. Patriots, citizens, Americans, if we don't get this Agenda 21, I mean, we've got a lot of things going on across the country now. It's a mess, but this all roads lead to Agenda 21. It's in every level of your government. It's in every level of every department agency. It's everywhere. So this is, I mean, really, this is where you need to focus your energy on. It's about Agenda 21. Go to AmericanPolicy.org. Send Tom DeWeese some money there. Pick up that toolkit. Thank you, Tom, for being with us. We really appreciate it. We hope you'll come back and give us some updates.
Anytime. My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. We're going to take a break, and we will come back with Gretchen and Ann from Missouri Education Watchdog.
I'm here with Dr. Brian Ray of the National Home Education Research Institute, and we have great news for the folks here in St. Louis, Missouri. Dr. Ray is coming to St. Louis on January 31st, Thursday evening at 7 p.m. He'll be at the Family Vision Library in St. Peter's. Dr. Ray is the nation's leading most authority on homeschool research, and he's coming here to share some information that he has on some important topics. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Ray.
Hey, you're welcome. It's good to be here again.
So, Dr. Ray, you've been in St. Louis before. You've been here. A welcome guest here on Culture Vigilante. Tell me, what can the folks expect to hear from you on the 31st?
I think I just want to give people a chance to hear about what's going on. There are a lot, homeschooling keeps growing. People know that. It's a serious choice now. I would say, I wouldn't call it mainstream, but it is an opportunity for mainstream America. However, at the same time, even though we talk about it as free, legal, all that in every state, I think there are there's an increasing number of academics, scholars, professor types who really are irritated about it. They have angst about it, and I think we're seeing more attacks on home education. And these people affect policymakers. I want to talk about that a little bit at the meeting.
Absolutely, because education reform is a big topic here in Missouri, and Missouri homeschoolers need to understand how policy affects them as homeschoolers. It's not just about public education. What goes on in the public education realm affects the homeschooling realm, and they need to be in tune with that. Will you be able to address some of those issues?
Absolutely. If people just sit back and think, okay, we're free, it's just fine, if that's the attitude of people who are considering home-based education or homeschoolers, they're in for a big surprise, and things are going to get rough in the next several years. I mean, that's why people have to know, what are common core standards? How might that influence private education? What happens at the state level with tax-funded education, and how does that affect the thinking of policymakers and what they might do the next time around when somebody proposes a law to control homeschoolers more? You think you're free, but you've got to stay on your toes, and you've got to know what these people are thinking.
And it just becomes more complicated every year. It's not the simple homeschooling life of 10 years ago.
That's right. And I think also with the idea that a lot of homeschoolers have, that somehow they could get a little bit of free stuff from the public system, and it'll be okay at home. We've got to get rid of that idea too. And there is no free lunch. Whenever there's a piper out there, whoever's paying the piper calls the tune, and I think people have to be aware of that. I'm going to give some good news, and I'm going to give some challenges, and I'm going to get people thinking about some of these issues. And we'll also have a time for a little Q&A, and I'll try to make that exciting for the people too.
Okay, great. That's just a little bit of what you can expect when you come to see Dr. Ray at the Family Vision Library. It's at 2020 Parkway Drive, St. Peter's, Missouri. Look for that information up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and there's also a Facebook page, An Evening with Dr. Ray. Look for it there. And we are looking forward to talking to you on January 31st, Dr. Ray.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it. I'll see a lot of people there.
Great. See you then.
cause I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
We're back. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you are listening to Culture Vigilante. We're here every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Central Time. And tonight we've been talking about Agenda 21. We talk about it a lot here. There's a lot of stuff going on, but actually all roads lead to Agenda 21, and Tom DeWeese did a fabulous job of giving us an outline of what we can do to start combating these issues on a local level. And I hope you'll all go to AmericanPolicy.org and pick up that toolkit and some of the books there and start organizing folks in your community. And really, folks, it's not hard to show up at your county council meetings to kind of rattle the cages there and start this ball rolling. And once you find that you do, it will gain steam and momentum. And here with us tonight, you heard me talk a few minutes ago about Dr. Brian Ray. Dr. Ray from Oregon with the National Home Education Research Institute is coming to St. Louis. If you've never had an opportunity to listen to Dr. Ray, if you're an education wonk, and if you're not, if you're a parent and you're thinking about educational alternatives for your children, or if your children are in the public education system, you really need to come and hear Dr. Ray talk about the educational process. He's done more research on homeschooling and education than just about anybody in the United States, more informed on those issues than he's probably the nation's leading most authority. He'll be here on the 31st to talk about the generalities of how education policy is affecting private and homeschooling and Common Core standards and how that's affecting everybody. And tonight we have with us Gretchen Logue and Ann Gassel, two of the best education bloggers in the country. Missouri Education Watchdog is their blog, and they've done more research on the Common Core than anybody I've ever read, and they're more informed on it and engaged in this issue. They've worked tirelessly for the last several years in trying to get the word out, and through their hard work, I think people are starting to wake up a little bit. Welcome, ladies. Thanks for being with us. You've been in Jefferson City all day.
Yeah, it's been a long day.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. So open a bottle of wine and sit back and decompress. So let's start with your trip to Jefferson City today. What'd you do?
This was our day to really bring the topic of Common Core to the forefront on people's radar. What we found was very little knowledge of the issues with Common Core, the fact that it's in our state, the fact that it has tremendous cost.
Okay, back up. Okay, this is costing us trillions of dollars. I mean, it's hugely expensive. How come? Okay, I mean, I know why. You tell us why. Why do the legislators not know that we have Common Core in Missouri?
Well, probably because it bypassed the legislative process. It was It was signed by the governor, the state board members, the majority of the state board members, and Chris Nicastro. So none of it ever went through the legislature as far as funding requests.
It's a money thing, though. All money has to be appropriated through the legislature. How come they don't know?
Because it was stimulus funding. And it was under this because, well, basically, you had to sign to get out of the No Child Left Behind waivers. You had to sign on to Common Core. And traditionally, those sorts of things are left up to a state agency. Usually a state agency doesn't, or, you know, maybe a state agency does, but maybe a state agency doesn't sign a state up to so much funding, unfunded mandates. So that's really what happened here, is that it was a process that was kind of under the table that bypassed the legislators. Now what's happening is that the districts are discovering this is costing them a lot of money to be able to adhere to the mandates, and they're realizing that it may not be costing the state so much, but it's going to be costing the districts, and they don't have the money.
Okay, so let's back up just one little bit here. Common Core standards, just a real quick definition. It's a government-led common curriculum across the board, state by state. It's the same for everybody. One size fits all education.
That's absolutely right. There's 45 states signed on in some way to one of the two consortia who are developing the assessments for these standards. So that only leaves 5 states that are out of the process, and everybody else is expected to use these standards, teach by these standards, and have every child progress at exactly the same rate across 45 states.
So school districts across the state and across the country, across 45 states, are changing their curriculums, which is costly, changing their teaching methods, which is costly, providing assessments in a new way, which is costly. And the state is not funding it. The government's not funding it. They're expecting the they're expecting your local district to foot the bill.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the districts really were not aware that this was coming. There are some rural districts in the state that are struggling just to do the online portion of the MAP test, and the online testing that's going to be associated with Common Core is far more extensive and requires more technology, more bandwidth, and operating costs.
And our legislature is just totally out in the ozone on this. They know nothing.
And that's not, you know, from what we've, Ann and I have discovered, that's not unusual because, as I said, you know, we've been writing about it for a couple of years. But since it bypassed the legislative approval or oversight, a lot of legislators are just discovering it themselves.
So and really, this was really by design. This
yeah,
was, you know,
sure.
Some people studied the systems in all of the states and discovered this weakness within the system and exploited it in order to get Common Core instated.
Okay. Do you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
The departments of elementary and secondary education, the education departments, have operated with a certain degree of autonomy. You know, they are charged with developing the standards, and people tend to defer to them as the experts. And Gretchen can talk to this a little bit more, but really by design, this is why they had it come through with the No Child Left Behind waiver applications and the Race to the Top grant applications.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, amazing. So these Common Core curriculums, can you discuss anything on the content of these curriculums?
Well, the content at this point to us, I mean, the content is. It's not irrelevant, but the main point is that the states have the constitutional right to set their educational directive and delivery systems.
Mm-hmm.
That is what has been superseded. So you could say that maybe the standards are better, maybe they're worse. But the point is that it's the state's job, it's the state's charge duty to deliver the education. Not a consortia, not a 26-state consortia that Missouri finds itself in, nor the federal government that funds the consortia. So that's really what we want to focus on, that this is what the state was charged to do. The state is basically saying, take over our duties and tell us how we need to now spend our money. That's it in a nutshell.
Okay, amazing. And so how were you ladies received today?
Overall, very well.
Mm-hmm.
They appreciated us bringing this to their attention. Many people expressed that they would much rather see as much local control as possible in the area of education. Did not appreciate having federal intrusion into that process.
Okay, well, that's good. Okay, so you ladies do not only focus on Missouri. I mean, you do a lot of research across the country. How is it looking across the country? Okay, so if the Missouri legislators are not pleased, are other states kind of following suit? Or are they dismayed by the ridiculousness of the idea of Common Core? Is anybody proposing legislation anywhere in the country to kind of combat this, like we're trying to propose legislation to fight Agenda 21?
Yeah, there are several states. As a matter of fact, we went to a Senate hearing in Indianapolis last week where they have legislation to get that state out of Common Core. Now, that was a very long hearing with a lot of expert testimony that focused very much on the quality of the standards themselves. And the top, English language arts curriculum draft writer, Sandra Stotsky, testified and said that the English language arts standards were significantly worse than the standards that Indiana already had in place. And Zev Werman testified that the math standards were also very weak. They had a lot of holes left in them. And in many ways, it's a constructivist form of teaching of math, which he said can actually be quite dangerous for young children in terms of how they learn math concepts.
Really, as opposed to just not getting a good foundation for them to carry on throughout their academic career?
Yes, many of them, if they finish the standards up through high school, they will not be prepared to take college-level math courses. We've had one professor say they can't complete an engineering degree.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my
gosh. They just will not have the foundational background in order to be able to do that.
So with all the push for STEM education, how is that? That's not lining up.
Well, when part of your goal is to be able to compare the performance of U.S. students with students around the world, the United States has led in education for a number of years. That's why foreign countries send some of their brightest students to our universities, because we're ahead.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be able to compare, now you're saying, well, let's compare with the people who are behind us. So where do you think what direction do you think the standards are going to go?
Yeah, that's not going, and that's going to be worse in the long run for employability and industry and technology here in the United States. It's just going to go down the toilet if this maintains. Okay, so we have a background on Common Core. So it doesn't stop with public education, and I think that's the next step we need to take it to. While they've got their arm around the necks of the public education students, this is reaching out into private schools and homeschools as well.
Right.
So let's elaborate on that a little bit and kind of explain how that touches the lives of all of us folks out here who've homeschooled our kids, who have put our kids in a private school, who think we are dodging that bullet. We're not dodging that bullet.
No. In fact, David Coleman, who wrote many of the standards, who was one of the lead writers, is now head of the ACT. And he wants to align the SAT to Common Core standards. So, basically, if you're a homeschooled student, private school student, if you don't know what those standards and how those assessments look and you haven't learned in the same way or the same material, then if you take the SAT, it's in all probability you're not going to do very well. It doesn't really show what you know or how smart you are or anything. It just tells you that you have not been educated in the same standards and assessments as public school students. So when people say, well, I'll just homeschool or I'll just private school, that's really not, that may not be a good option in the future.
Right, because if you're trying to college track your kids,
right,
and prepare them for careers, they're
right,
not going to get into college because they won't be able to pass the college boards.
That's correct.
Okay, that's frightening. That's frightening to a lot of folks. So how, and have you found that there are steps being taken by private schools at least to kind of absorb some of this issue?
What do you mean? You mean to go toward the Common Core or away from the Common Core?
Yeah, because, I mean, there are a lot of programs that are being offered, and I think Dr. Ray will touch on some of this when he comes to St. Louis, but I know that there are a lot of programs that are being offered to homeschool kids that are by virtual online schooling and, you know, part-time schooling in the public schools, part-time on your own. And then we also, I guess, need to talk about data collection as well. But it seems to me that if public schools, I mean, if private schools are going to, if your private school student is going to advance to a point where, you know, it's prestigious for you to go to a private school and for you to get into a good university, and if private schools want to maintain that kind of prestige, they're going to have to do something to see that their kids are still getting into college.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we see, and Ann and I talked about it today. I mean, we've seen some schools, private schools, willingly embrace the Common Core standards, which is really quite interesting and shocking to us, wouldn't you say, Ann?
Yeah, mind-boggling really kind of comes to mind.
Because your private school, you know, generally how most people think of private school or homeschool is that you're doing something that's differentiating your student from the public school educational model. I mean, that's usually why you do something like that. And some of these private schools, as I said, are embracing Common Core standards, and they don't have to.
Well, because it's prestigious. I mean, they still want their
yeah,
graduates to go on to, you know, to whatever the chosen universities are, and they want a high graduation rate, and they want a high post-secondary school enrollment rate. You know, that's it's all good for their for their enrollment as well. So, okay, so let's kind of shift gears a little bit, and I don't know if you can talk to this or not, but I think you've done a little research on this. Since we've been kind of talking about Agenda 21, and I don't know, and I'm not sure that you know for sure either if any of this is part of the curriculum, but there's a movement in the public education realm to kind of condition students toward Agenda 21 kind of thinking, green policy and sustainable living and all those kinds of things. Can you girls kind of elaborate? Have you run across any of that in your research where you're finding the curriculums are being manipulated to kind of go down those roads?
Well, Gretchen wrote a wonderful post on this last week that looked at the way they're teaching math. And group work is very key. Consensus is far more important than correctness in terms of the answer. That's very much Agenda 21. That's global citizens, and we all have to work together. That's one of those you know buzzwords that you see everywhere is
yep,
cooperative learning and consensus building.
So it would make perfect sense for the federal government to be mandating a Common Core curriculum, since Agenda 21 and sustainable living is the way to get control of everybody, to start indoctrinating our students in that way of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, and consensus is a lovely
yeah,
thing to work on, but it doesn't work in math. There's either a right answer or a wrong answer, but when you value above the right and the wrong answer whether your group has reached consensus on the answer, it's truly a misapplication. But you can see how that really begins to warp the thinking of the students.
Okay, so I mean, and it's everywhere, and as time goes by, it's not going to get any better unless people start to speak out. When you were in the Capitol today, were there any other than the fact that you stunned a few people down there? Is anybody taking action, or is anybody interested in taking action?
I believe in this session. I believe in this session we will see both a bill in the Senate and one in the House.
Can you elaborate on it, or is it too soon to discuss it?
Kind of maybe a little too soon to give details, but I think it's probably safe to say that much.
Yeah. Okay, so they are aware of the Common Core problem, and hopefully we will see some sort of legislation at least floating through at least one of the houses to kind of wake people up and educate them on the issue.
Right.
Okay, very good. Anything else happen you ladies want to drop on us today?
I'm getting ready to post. We were gone all day when we were driving over. Michelle Malkin, who is going to be in town in St. Louis this weekend, she's going to be the keynote speaker Friday night at the Constitutional Coalition. She has come out swinging against Common Core.
Oh, excellent.
So that is a wonderful, what do I want to say, development. So you can go to National Review, you can go to Missouri Education Watchdog. We're going to link her article, and she promises that there will be more to come, writings against Common Core.
Excellent, excellent. That'll be a great. She'll be a great windmill for that issue. She'll reach a lot of people. So that's great.
She will. Yes.
Yep.
All right, ladies. I'm gonna let you go because I know you're tired. You had a long day. Are you back in town or are you on the road?
We're back in town.
Okay. We're back. Next time we're gonna wear flats.
Yeah, walking those marble floors, that's hard on you.
Oh, it was a long day, but it was very fruitful. So,
okay, very good. Thank you, Gretchen Logue and Ann Gassel, MissouriEducationWatchdog.com.
Yes.
Okay, MissouriEducationWatchdog.com. Go there, look for that Michelle Malkin article, and everything you ever wanted to know about Common Core is there. So take a look. Thanks for being with us tonight, ladies.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Okay, bye.
Okay, we are going to take a break, and we will be back with Dan Sexton from John Birch.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
This is the Grassroots Minute. Let me see. I'm checking my pocket change here. A quarter, a dime, two pennies, and a piece of lint. No, I don't have a $1 trillion coin. Barack Obama may soon have one, though, if the Congress and White House fail to raise the current $16.4 trillion borrowing limit. No, this is not a joke. Former Mint Director Philip Deal, a top aide of late Treasury Secretary Lloyd Benson, said the Mint is authorized by law to produce investment-quality bullion coins to compete on the world market. The $1 trillion coin would be made of platinum, which would not need approval by Congress. Liberals have even started a Twitter campaign using the hashtag #MintToCoin. And a petition with more than 6,500 signatures was posted on the White House's website to encourage President Obama to authorize the coin. I think it's about the silliest thing I ever heard, said Republican strategist Reid Gallen. It's also a perfect example of how we deal with things as a country. Have a difficult problem? Change it. Don't want to cut something? Spend more money. How would the rest of the world view our debt market if we did this? What would this say to foreign investors if every time Obama needed more funding to pay for his liberal socialist programs, he just minted another platinum coin? Check your pocket change. I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
This is Lisa Payne Nager. We're back. You are listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, and this is Culture Vigilante, and we're talking about Agenda 21 and how it has literally invaded all aspects of our lives. We just got off the phone with Gretchen and Ann from Missouri Education Watchdog talking about the Common Core and how that might be involved in Agenda 21. And we earlier spoke to Tom DeWeese, and
Tonight, we also have with us Dan Sexton from the John Birch Society. John Birch is heavily involved in fighting the Agenda 21 issue. Met some of Dan's cohorts at the meeting that I was at last night in my community with the East-West Gateway Council, and they were talking Agenda 21 there. Thanks for being with me tonight, Dan. Hello, Dan. Uh-oh, technical difficulties. Let's see if we can get Dan back on the line here. Anyway, Dan, the folks, the good folks at the John Birch Society have some great information for us. I mean, you can go to jbs.org to get their packet of information. Are you there yet, Dan?
I'm here.
Okay. Sorry, I couldn't hear you a minute ago. Did I lose you?
Well, I all I heard was I heard nothing. I was just waiting.
Oh, okay. So maybe my board is a little wonky. Anyway, so Dan Sexton from the John Birch Society. Talked to Dan a few weeks ago. He was at another meeting that I was at, and the John Birch Society has taken up this Agenda 21 issue, and they've put together a campaign also to help us fight this Agenda 21 issue. They're out there trying to educate and inform the public and give us some strategies. So what have you got going? First of all, tell me a little bit about the John Birch Society, Dan.
Okay, Lisa, thank you for having me on, by the way. Honored to be here. The John Birch Society's been around since 1958. It was founded by Robert Welch, who was a child prodigy. He was a brilliant gentleman that... Well, he graduated from high school at 12, from college at 16, and eventually wound up as a candy manufacturer and got to know some other very prominent businessmen from across the country. And back then, he was watching America's slide into socialism, and so he decided to do something about it and invited businessmen to meet with him in a small house in Indianapolis, Indiana. Gave him a two-day lecture of what's going wrong and why he felt America needed a grassroots education action organization designed to develop a sufficiently informed electorate to turn things around.
And amazing.
Those gentlemen pulled their resources to get us started.
Okay. And how long have you been involved with John Birch?
I joined just out of high school in 1975. And
really?
I was, my chapter leader lived about 8 miles further out in the country than I did. And
you folks are long time visionaries and dedicated for the long haul.
Well, that's the key is once you find out what's really been going on and that it's not by accident, then you're better armed and able to fight against it. And evidently, we stepped on people's toes in the early days because in the Socialist International held in Prague, Czechoslovakia, I think it was 1960, the topic of discussion was how to get rid of the anti-communist sentiment in the United States, particularly how can we destroy the John Birch Society.
Oh.
And it was after that meeting that a front page headline in the People's Daily World, I think, a communist newspaper out of California, had the headline, "Enter from Stage Right, the John Birch Society," and it was a smear article that was later picked up by mainstream media and then used for about 7-8 years to attack the John Birch Society. And Robert Welch asked J. Edgar Hoover to investigate us, and he said, "No, we know you wear the white hats," so they wouldn't investigate us, and he asked Congress, and they wouldn't do it. And finally, a Senate fact-finding committee, state Senate fact-finding committee in California, investigated the John Birch Society for 2 years and exonerated us completely of all charges. And I, from what I understand, some of the members of that committee joined afterwards.
I mean, grassroots have always been persecuted, and the Tea Party folks know very well how the grassroots or movements has been persecuted and people have been attacked, and it's just not new. This is nothing new. It's been going on forever since the beginning of time with the grassroots.
That's right.
Okay, so you guys are involved in the education of turning us away from socialism. I know that you do other things other than deal with the Agenda 21 issue, but let's talk about what you've got going here. I have a nice little stack of wonderful information here. Tell me about what you guys are doing to educate and arm the folks against Agenda 21.
Well, we've got some basic tools, a booklet called Agenda 21 and You, and a reprint from our magazine, the New American Magazine, that it comes out twice a month, and it's also available online at thenewamerican.com, where you can find more articles. And like we had Bill Jasper, one of the senior editors for the magazine, in Rio de Janeiro in 1992, and then a special issue about the magazine about that Earth Summit.
Uh-huh.
And Agenda 21 back then. And we've got a DVD that does a good job of explaining the subtleness of this gradual implementation of these initiatives of sustainability, and then a trifold brochure, and we even have a presentation. If people like to give presentations, we've got a PowerPoint for their use to get in front of audiences like civic groups or, you know, whatever group they belong to. We've got a good presentation for them. And the whole idea is to develop the sufficiently informed electorate. Tom DeWeese mentioned earlier about laying the groundwork for voting these people out of office by their not agreeing to sign the paper.
Absolutely.
And the key is to reach out to our friends and neighbors, relation voters, with a plan to educate them as to what's going on. We have what we call the 110-6 plan. And the idea is that if people will commit to educating 100 voter households at least four times a year, you can do more. We don't mind, but we just suggest, you know, four times a year to bring these voter households up to speed on issues. Twice a year we recommend our Freedom Index, which shows the voting records of the House and Senate on 10 key issues, and we show the percentage of time they voted constitutionally on those 10 issues. So,
awesome.
One congressman might have a 10% vote or 10% rating, and some might have a 90 or 100%.
And do you track that on your website?
Yes, uh-huh. I think non-members can go back 2 or 3 years with it's called the Freedom Index, and then members can go back to 1987 to get voter records. But anyway, the other two times would be to educate them on issues like Agenda 21 or support your local police or stop the law, the Sea Treaty. There's a lot of issues out there, but the idea is that those 100 people are going to be better informed when they go to the polls because of your efforts.
Right. Well, I've
now,
got this.
Go ahead.
Your Agenda 21 and You booklet that I've got. I've got the pamphlets and I've got the larger flyers and stuff, and I haven't watched the DVD yet. But this Agenda 21 and You book, it has everything in here. It's just in a very small booklet style, very easy to read and easy to understand, but it's a connect-the-dots kind of a pamphlet. It touches on everything. It gives you an idea of what sustainable development is, which is the huge buzzword of, you know, that you'll hear when you go to your county council meetings and your East-West Gateway Council meetings.
Anything with the word green in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it tells you how all of these things affect you. It gives you a short history of how Agenda 21 was brought into the American government. Talks about how high gas prices and forbidding human access to open lands. I mean, it's got everything in here in a nice, easy to read format. So tell me, and you were going to talk about the pamphlets?
Yes, we have a trifold brochure that we use the different tools with our 110-6 plan as a means to whet people's appetites about the issue to begin with, and follow up with a little more information like the reprint or the booklet, and bring up their level of understanding so that, you know, they'll feel the conviction they should do something about it. And then we help them in how to write an effective letter to their state rep or state senator, their city council members. We, for instance, I think there's three chapters in Edmond, Oklahoma, and Agenda 21 came up as or ICLEI came up as an item for the agenda, and one of the members found out about it, so they held a meeting the night before, and they put together some questions and spread themselves out in the crowd, and everybody had the same list of questions, so when the first person was called on, they asked the first question.
Ah.
And the way the questions were written, it kind of knocked down the arguments for, anyway, the gal that was presenting it was rather flustered, and so she decided they were going to end discussion tonight. We'll discuss this more in a couple months, which gave them more time to prepare. And with all the pressure they put on the city council members wanting to present their case against ICLEI and Agenda 21, they had to change the venue to a larger room and set up a microphone.
Awesome.
So this huge crowd of people could go up and give their 3 minutes worth. And they went up there dressed well and with a calm voice and respectful and diplomatically told them that they wanted no part of it. And the city council voted it down.
And so Alinsky tactics can work for conservatives. I mean, basically, that's what it is. You've got folks spread out in a room. You've got your agenda questions organized, and everybody's got the same mission, and you're loaded for bear. Very good.
Yep.
So between your toolbox and the toolbox at American Policy, everybody listening tonight should be very well equipped to help engage and educate the folks in their communities on Agenda 21.
Yes, and there's a wide variety of groups of people that we can reach out to. For instance, you know, an automobile association would be concerned about Agenda 21 since they want to get us all back on bicycles, and they would like to sell more cars.
Right.
You know, and so there's all kinds of businesses are going to be affected, and the 10 part of the 110-6 plan are those people, the opinion molders, people that, because of their position, have a larger sphere of influence that we ask people to commit to educating 10 opinion molders every month about this issue and other issues. And then the 6 stands for individuals, personal friends, neighbors, and relation. And this way, you get more people calling and writing their city council members, their county council members, about this issue. You know, it just increases dramatically the chances of it getting voted down and not implemented.
Absolutely. Targeting those right demographics and using your media to help you get that done. That's awesome. So how do we get in touch with you folks? Obviously, John Birch has chapters all across the country, and we hope you have several in Missouri. How many do you have in Missouri?
Well, we never, you know, tip our hand as to how
okay.
Are.
Probably very smart. How can folks get involved with you if they want to get in touch and get a hold of this material?
Well, I'd recommend, as you mentioned earlier, going to www.jbs.org and ordering a free information packet.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even, I think, ask for a packet specifically dealing with Agenda 21 if you'd like. And, of course, my number is 636-448-6575. And I'd be happy to visit with anybody about this issue and others and what they can do and to do it effectively.
All right. Very good. And your website is wonderful. And I have pretty much the entire stack of this information, and it's very well put together, very easy to read, it's very concise, very easy to absorb information. So go to jbs.org and pick some of this information up, folks, because, you know, we are on the precipice
You know, I mean, we are really there, and we're really close. And the Obama administration is only too eager to push through United Nations treaties and agendas at any moment. So the more people you educate, the quicker you educate them, the better off we're all going to be. Dan Sexton from the John Birch Society, we really appreciate you being with us and giving us this information tonight. Very helpful. We hope that you will come back and keep us updated on the progress and any issues that are coming up.
I'd be happy to. Are we about out of time, or would I have just...
You have plenty of time. What else have you got?
Well, I would just like to point out, I mentioned earlier about developing the sufficiently informed electorate.
Yes.
And this can seem like a daunting task to people when they think about, you know, there's a lot of people in the country. But I try to break it down for people numerically. And I look back at the census figures from 2010 and the 2010 and 2008 election and looked at the average number of people in a congressional district, and these are averages and rounded for simplicity, but there's about 710,000 people in a district.
Mm-hmm.
And of those, on the average, 479,000 are eligible to vote. Of those, 326,000 on the average register to vote. Of those, the average number of people voting in a presidential election year was about 300,000, so the average number who determined the winner was 150,001. On the off years, because the House is up every 2 years to be more accountable to the people, it drops down to 220,000 voting, 110,000 and one determining who wins.
That does make it more manageable. You would think that a well-organized campaign could certainly reach that many people.
It can. With that 110-6 program, 300 to 500 members in a district can change the outcome. And when you look at the 2010 election, in that election there were 199 House races decided by less than 50,000 votes.
Wow.
So we don't have to educate everybody, just a sufficient number.
Yeah.
And with 300 to 500 people executing the 110-6 plan, it can be done.
Okay. Go to jbs.org, folks, and pick up that information. They have a great website. They've got tons of information there, not just about Agenda 21, but pretty much all the issues there. And get in touch with Dan Sexton and become educated and start a John Birch chapter in your community.
That'd be fantastic.
Okay. Thank you, John. Thank you, Dan. We appreciate it. We hope you'll come back soon.
Be happy to. Thank you.
Very good. Okay, that's just going to about wrap it up for us here tonight. I want to give one more plug. January 31st, Dr. Brian Ray will be here in St. Louis. If you're anywhere in the surrounding area, make the drive in. He's going to be at the Family Vision Library on January 31st. Tomorrow night, join Kevin Harnett, Hillbilly Logic. Monday night, come back with us. Dave Court will be here with the Hour of Truth. And Tuesday evening, we have Cynthia Davis. At 8 o'clock, Homefront, I believe, is the name of her show. And next week, here on Culture Vigilante, we're going to have Bill Federer. He's got a new book out. We're going to have him on to talk about that. And Steve Marks from the Gateway Civil Liberties Alliance is going to come and talk to us. They've got an event coming up, and maybe we're going to discuss a few of maybe the issues, the gun control issues that we've all been hearing about for the last few weeks, maybe the executive orders a little bit. And right to work is kind of a big deal here in Missouri. A lot of people are really torqued about the fact that we've got a veto-proof majority legislature, and we don't have a majority legislature with the backbone to push right to work through. So Patrick Warner from Americans for Prosperity is going to come and talk to us about that. AFP is supporting Right to Work. And we may have a few other surprises for you next week. We just haven't lined them up yet. So come back here. We'll be here again. We're here every week at 7 p.m. Central Time right here for your Culture Vigilante Hour. And we hope you've enjoyed the program, and we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
Oh.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.